This is Casey.
This is Chrissy. I got a little excited. Casey usually does it, so.
Go ahead.
No, you're fine. Go.
No.
I just said what I was going to say.
This is the Two C's podcast.
I forgot that part. See? I'm just going to be you for today.
All right. Welcome, new listeners. We have Red Granite, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
South Lyon, Michigan. And Memphis, Tennessee. So welcome, guys.
Welcome to our podcast.
And sorry it's a little late this week. I got very sick this weekend. Not with COVID, though.
No. Your normal sickness.
Yeah. I ate something and it didn't agree with me. It's fine.
But you have an autoimmune disease, so.
Yeah. So this week we decided to do...
Like, people that disappeared that are not necessarily, famous or whatever. Because mine didn't become famous until she disappeared.
And mine didn't disappear, but was famous, and there's a little story to it, so. Well, not a little story, it's a very huge story. But, sorry, I didn't mean to demean that, but I just, it's a big story. I didn't know about it until I watched the documentary about Sam Cooke, the two killings of Sam Cooke, and that's how I learned about the person I'm doing.
Nice. A little recap from last week. So we said that our cousin Isaac was going to need to be put on a heart transplant list. Because he has a heart condition and it was killing his heart. He got on the transplant list and he got a heart. And he had a heart transplant.
2 nights ago?
Yeah, 2 or 3 nights ago. And he walked for the first time today. He did 2 laps. And he got moved out of ICU.
Yep. He is a frickin' rock star.
For real. He just turned 21 a couple months ago. He's amazing.
Yeah, we're proud of that dude.
If I was younger than him, I would want to be him when I grew up.
For real. And to see, did they take a picture of his new heart?
No, that was his old heart.
Okay.
I don't know if they took a picture of his new heart.
Because I would like to see that as well.
Yeah.
Like the contrast, or I guess I could Google, like, what a healthy heart looks like.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the one that...
No.
That they sent us.
Yeah. So, no.
So we got to see his old heart.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
So we're very excited for him. We're very excited for the Schmid family. Very blessed.
Yes. Thank you, everybody that prayed.
Yes.
We appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. Are we?
We're ready.
All right.
I think that's all I got.
I think I'm first this week, aren't I?
Yes.
Okay. This is Chrissy, by the way. So the person that I did mine on is the disappearance of Jean Spangler, and my sources this week were Wikipedia.com, of course, because...
Wikipedia is amazing.
Exactly.
Donate if you can.
LA Public Library, and 9news.com, which I assume is their news station. So, Jean Elizabeth Spangler was born September 2nd, 1923. She disappeared October 7th, 1949. She was, some say 26, but I believe she was 27. I think she had just turned 27 that month before. So she was 27 when she disappeared. She has been missing for 71 years.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Long time. She has an ex-husband, Dexter, I believe it's pronounced Benner, and they were married for about, I think, almost 4 years, I believe. They got divorced just before 4 years. And then Jean and Dexter also have a daughter together. So, Jean, a little background. Jean Spangler was born in Seattle, Washington. She attended Franklin High School in Los Angeles, California. I don't know when she moved to California, it didn't say. It just said that she was born in Washington and she went to high school in California, so. She graduated in 1941. As a teen, Jean had danced with the Earl Carroll Theater and Florentine Gardens. I've never heard of Florentine Gardens before.
That is a mouthful.
Right? But I have heard of Earl Carroll Theater. I think that's pretty, like, a pretty big deal in California. In fact, I think maybe Lisa's niece danced there, maybe?
I don't have any idea.
Someone I know. I remember hearing about it. I don't know. I think maybe it was Lisa's niece. I could be totally wrong, though, and if that's the case, I'm sorry.
We're just making shit up as we go.
In 1942, Jean married Dexter, and they had a daughter named Christine, and she was born April 22nd, 1944. That's a perfect month to get to be, I was going to say, to get born, to be born.
To get born.
One of my friends makes fun of me from our podcast because I can't speak English. You know who you are. Anyways.
Chrissy just gave you the evil eye.
They divorced in 1946, which was about 4 years, like I said before. Jean and Dexter had a long custody battle. I believe it lasted about 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Before Jean was finally awarded custody, and then he was allowed visitation. At the time of her disappearance, she lived with her mother, Florence, her 5-year-old daughter, Christine, her brother, Edward, and her sister-in-law, Sophie, on Colgate Avenue in the Park La Brea residential complex near Wilshire Boulevard. I believe that's a very big... Wilshire Boulevard is like...
It sounds like a big to-do.
To-do. Yeah, that's the word I was looking to-do. For. If you're going to see me, you see me waving my hand like, to do. But you can't see that because we're recording. So yeah. You have no idea. Anyways, on Friday, October 7th, 1949, Jean left her home around 5 p.m. And when she left her daughter with her sister-in-law. And then she told her sister-in-law, that she was meeting Dexter, which is her ex-husband.
Yes.
To discuss late child support payments. Because he was not paying her when he was supposed to be paying her. After, she was going to go to work and shoot scenes for a film that she was working on that was overnight. Because they were filming at night.
I think I was listening to another podcast and... Jean Spengler sounds really familiar.
Yeah, I've never heard of her.
But it might be because Grandma and Grandpa lived off of Spengler Road.
Oh, yeah, that could be.
And anyways, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. So 2 hours after she left, Jean called her sister-in-law, Sophie, to check on her daughter, Christine, and make sure that everything was going okay and that they had everything that they needed. I'm never going to hear the end of this.
Wow, it's early, too.
Right? I told him that I needed to start drinking and maybe I would...
Oh, I don't.
I would be better. But maybe not either. It could sound even worse. Who knows? Anyways. So she told Sophie that she was going to have to work the whole night, 8 hours, because they weren't going to get off early and she had so many scenes that she had to film or whatever, that it was going to take the whole 8 hours, and that she wouldn't be home until the next morning. At the time, Jean's mother, Florence, was out of town visiting family in Louisville, Kentucky. The following morning, October 8th, when Sophie woke up and Jean was not home, Sophie went to the police department and filed a missing persons report because she didn't return home, obviously. When the police checked with the studio, they found that there was no indication that they were recording that night and that she was not scheduled to film at all.
Uh-oh.
Yes. And then a woman from the farmer's market grocery store over by where they lived saw her browsing the shelves or whatever, and she said that it seemed like she was waiting for someone.
Okay.
Which could have been her ex-husband.
Mm-hmm. Because they were supposed to meet up.
Yes. And she saw her around 6 p.m. that night. Or the night before. Or the night that she disappeared.
Okay.
That she left to go meet her ex-husband.
Got it.
Okay. And then that was the last known sighting of Jean that they've been able to,
pinpoint?
Definitely, yes.
Okay.
Like, there's been people that have said that they thought they saw her or whatever, or she matched description or whatever, but that's the last person that they know for sure saw her alive.
Okay.
So, when the police went to go question Dexter, her ex-husband, because the sister had told the police, the sister-in-law, had told the police that,
they were supposed to meet up.
Yes, to talk about child support payments. Dexter was a little confused because he was not supposed to meet up with her.
Uh-oh, geez.
And he was not behind on his child support payments.
Who was Jean meeting?
That's a good question. He said that he had not talked to her for several weeks or seen her. And then he is married now. Well, I don't know if he's still alive now. But at the time when they questioned him, he was newly married. And his wife, they'd only been married for about 6 months. But she also said that he was telling the truth, that that they hadn't heard from her or seen her in a couple weeks. So she's not sure why she had said that they were supposed to meet. So on October 9th, the day after she was reported missing, her purse was found near the Ferndale entrance of Griffith Park in Los Angeles. I'm going to, like, memorize this shit from now
no,
on.
No, you're
before
not.
You're right. I'm absolutely not going to.
You're not going to. Because I do the same thing.
They found it at the entrance of Griffith Park in Los Angeles, which was about 5.5 miles from her home, give or take. It didn't say exactly how much it was. About 5.5 miles. Whatever. So both straps on one side, so I'm assuming that it was the purse that has, like, the hand, and then it's got two on each side.
Yes.
Because it says both straps on one side were cut.
Oh, okay.
Or it looked like, not cut. It looked like somebody had tried to yank her purse away from her. So they had 60 police officers that went over and 100 volunteers that searched a 4,107-acre park to see if they could find any other clues about her or of her. There was no money in her purse, and Jean's sister-in-law, Sophie, told the police that when Jean left the house that she hadn't taken any money with her. So, at that time, the police ruled that it probably was not a robbery because she didn't have any money or anything on her, so why would... Well, I guess they could rob her to see if she had money, but
yeah.
I don't know. But, like, her wallet and stuff was still in her purse, so nothing was taken, like, no.
So, it's like they went to try to get her purse, and, like, maybe someone, like, stopped them or whatever?
Maybe, or maybe they were just trying to get her and grabbed her purse, and
she was
trying to, like, get away or whatever. Let's see. So, in the purse, they found a note, and the note was addressed to someone named Kirk. The note said, "Kirk, can't wait any longer. Going to see Dr. Scott. It will work out best this way while mother is away. While my mother is away." The note ended in a comma, so the police believe that whatever she was writing, she got interrupted because she didn't finish what she was writing.
Okay.
Or they're assuming that she didn't finish what she was writing because it was a comma, like she was going to keep writing.
Yeah.
The person named Kirk and also Dr. Scott has never been located or found. When the police talked to Jean's family and friends, nobody knew who the Kirk person was or who Dr. Scott was. Jean's mother did say that Jean had gone out with someone named Kirk a couple times, but he had never come into the house. He always waited for her in the car. And that it was somebody that she had made movies with before. So she wasn't sure who it was. She didn't see the car. So the cops really didn't have anything to go on other than somebody named Kirk.
How many people is there named Kirk in the U.S.?
Well, how many actors are there named Kirk?
Kirk Douglas. That's all I'm saying.
We're getting there. We're not there yet. Don't ruin
I mean,
story.
Allegedly.
Yes, allegedly. So, the police questioned every doctor with the last name Scott in the Los Angeles area. But none of them had a patient with the last name Spangler or Benner, which was her ex-husband's last name, in case she was trying to, I don't want to say keep it down low or whatever, but...
the 1940s style.
Stupid. Like, if she doesn't want anyone to
She was trying
be able
to be incognito.
Yes, yes, yes. That sounds much better. Jean had also once been involved with an abusive man named Scotty, but Jean's lawyer informed the police that she had not heard from him or seen him in 2 years, so the police were like, it probably is not him. They did question him, though, and he also said that he hadn't seen her in a couple years, and, I mean, other than that, there's not really anything they can do because you can't prove one way or the other, you know? So, during the search, one volunteer's dog dug up a denim L.A. County jail uniform in a shallow hole, but no other belongings were ever found of Jean, and her body has never been found either. They also don't know how long the jail uniform had been out there.
Yeah.
So just because it was out there around the spot where her purse was found doesn't mean that it had anything to do with her disappearance either. So
I hear you.
At the time, so these are theories. At the time of her disappearance, Jean had recently completed filming a bit part in a film called Young Man with a Horn, which starred Kirk Douglas.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then this led public speculation to think that Kirk had something to do with her disappearance, or that he's the one that she was writing the note to. So after he had heard about the discovery of the note, and that people thought that he might have something to do with her disappearance,
some kind of scandal
or something, Kirk Douglas called the police department and denied that he even knew who Jean was.
Wait. They just made a movie together.
Yeah, but she only did bit parts.
Oh, okay.
So he might not have known.
Got it.
Who she was.
Okay.
Because she had just started out. So she was more popular as a dancer. People knew her as a dancer because that's what she had done.
Okay.
Since high school. But then she decided that she wanted to be an actress as well, so she started filming. And she did like 4 or 5 movies. 7. I was wrong. She had done 7 movies. So she was starting to get popular, but...
Yeah. She was on the brink.
Yes. Okay. So, although, when Douglas was later interviewed again on the telephone by the lead detective, Douglas then finally admitted that he did actually know her, and that he had, in fact, talked and kidded around with her on the set, but that he had never spent time with her outside of the film production. And that he did not realize that that's who it was until one of his friends that was also on the set of the movie came up and said, "Hey, do you remember that girl that's missing? She's the one that was in this film. She was wearing the whatever dress she was wearing or whatever, and you guys were dancing around and stuff." And he was like, "Oh, that's right. I forgot about her."
So, poor Jean.
Who knows? I don't know. So, on October 12th, Douglas gave a formal press statement in which he said, I told Detective Chief Thad Brown that I didn't remember the girl. Oh, I guess I could have waited because it's going to tell you now.
It's okay.
I didn't remember the girl or the name until a friend recalled it. Who it was. She was the one that worked as an extra in a scene with me in my picture, young man with a horn. Then I recalled that she was the tall girl in a green dress. I talked and kidded around with her a bit on the set, but I never saw her before or after that and have never been out with her. So that's it for the Michael Douglas theory. Kirk Douglas theory. Allegedly.
It's just a theory.
Yes. So, one of Jean's friends then told the police that Jean was 3 months pregnant when she disappeared. Jean told her that she was thinking about having an abortion, and at the time, abortions were illegal.
Yep.
So, the police believe that the Kirk person is the father of the baby.
Okay.
And that the Dr. Scott was who she was having, is who was giving her the abortion.
And that's probably the secret rendezvous that she was doing.
Yes.
And something probably happened. And
so, some people believe that she went to have an abortion and that something happened, went wrong, and either she had complications and died, or, I don't know, probably just that she had complications and died.
Or it was a murderer and they killed her.
Or that, yes, as well. So witnesses who frequented the same nightclubs and bars as Jean told police they had heard of a former medical student known as Doc who performed abortions for money as well. But police could not prove that he existed and there was no way to know whether or not she actually got an abortion or not either. So
back in the day, everyone knew someone who knew someone who knew someone that did that stuff.
True. The same friend told the police that Jean had told her that Robert Cummings, which is an actor, and her were having a casual affair at the time as well. Jean did not tell her who the father of the baby was. So they don't know if she was really pregnant.
Yeah.
They don't know who the father is. So I just want to make that abundantly clear that we do not know that Kirk Douglas.
No, we were just being silly.
Or Robert Cummings is the father. We don't have any idea. Neither one of them might be the father. I don't. She might not even be pregnant. I don't know.
So, she's definitely not pregnant anymore. Just saying, because she's 71 years.
71 or 73.
I thought you said
71. Yeah. So, some newspapers reported that Jean was feared to be one of several female victims in a series of killings in Los Angeles as well, and that she might have potentially been linked to the Black Dahlia murder. There's nothing that proves one way or the other, obviously, because they don't know whatever happened to her. Another theory that police investigated was that she was, that her disappearance was related to the mob because she supposedly was associated with Davy Ogle. Ogle? I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
I would just say Ogle.
Ogle, okay. Who was an associate of Mikey
Cohen.
Cohen's, thank you. In Palm Springs and then as well as in Las Vegas, Nevada with Ogle and Frank Nikolai. I'm pretty sure it's Nikolai.
Yeah.
Who also is a mobber. Mobber. A mobster.
Oh, those mobbers.
Mobbers. I like to use my own slang.
That's what we do here, guys. We make up our own words.
So, here's what's kind of crazy, though. So, she disappeared. A month later, Ogle disappeared because he was being investigated for fraud. And then a month after that, Mikey Cohen disappeared as well because he was being investigated for fraud. And then there has been a couple people who have said that they've seen all three of them together in Mexico. And then there's a lady who said that they were staying at a hotel that she saw that. Well, she identified her, but she couldn't say for sure whether one of the two guys. Yes. She did say that she was there with another man. She's absolutely positive it was her. And she was there with another man, but she couldn't say for sure which man it was. But there was no video cameras, so there was no way to prove. Also, there was a $1,000 reward, which I'm sure back then was a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she could have just been saying it so she could get the reward money as well. She didn't, though, because they couldn't prove. Let's see what else. So, after her disappearance, custody of her daughter went to Dexter and his wife temporarily on October 27th. And the following year, well, for that whole year, he and Jean's mother,
Florence,
were fighting for custody of the daughter. And he ended up winning full custody and would not let her
see. That's horrible.
Yes. Would not let her see her grandchild at all. So then he also defied a court order and went. Oh, so the court gave her visitation and he wouldn't let her see her. So he ended up going to jail for 15 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came out, packed up all their shit, and they moved. And she never found out where she went
after that,
right? And then he ended up later settling down in Florida. So I'm assuming that maybe the granddaughter got in touch with her grandma or whatever. Or they just found out where he actually ended up being. So the LAPD continued to search for her. And, I mean, it's been 71 years, I'm pretty sure that you're not going to get any information on where she is. Or, well, I mean, you never know, because people, if she did get killed or whatever, people do
well, say if she was buried or something and someone accidentally unburies her.
I just don't see somebody just disappearing and not getting in contact with her daughter.
Well, that's what I think strange. I mean, look, I don't even know how old she is, like 4.5-year-old St. Bernard, and she is really annoyed right now because she can't come in, but I wouldn't just drop her off somewhere and leave her.
I would. No, just kidding.
So, I mean, honestly, I can't say that I have a human child, but I can't imagine that that's ever easy.
No.
And
it just seems odd that, like, I mean, I could see her being, one, she wanted to be an actress, like, that's what she wanted to do, she wanted to be a dancer and an actress, so she would have given all of that up.
Yeah.
She gave up her daughter, she never talked to her family again. I just don't, I'm pretty sure she got murdered.
Or she had a botched abortion.
Yeah, I don't know. So, anyways, apparently, there have been sightings of her in the last 71 years. I don't know when the last one was because it didn't say. But in California, Phoenix, Arizona, and Mexico City. Oh, over the next 2 years after she disappeared. So there hasn't been anything lately.
She's not like Elvis?
No.
Not everyone's seen her?
She is still listed as a missing person, and LAPD never closed the case, so it's still an open case. It's just a cold case now. So, movies that she's been in. She was in The Miracle of the Bells, When My Baby Smiles at Me, Chicken Every Sunday. That sounds like a good one. Young Man with a Horn.
I really need to, like, know everything about that movie. I don't know why.
Wabash Avenue. That sounds like a horrible name. Champagne for Caesar and The Petty Girl. And that's it for me.
All right. I am doing mine. This is Casey. On Jesse Belvin. And like I said earlier, I had never heard of Jesse Belvin. And I don't consider myself a huge connoisseur. Is that what you would say? Yes. Of, like, jazz music. But, like, I love Sam Cooke. Like, I also didn't know that Sam Cooke was, shot and killed. So, when I watched the documentary, I was quite surprised. And, well, actually, let's not say be surprised. I like to Google shit before I watch it sometimes, because I don't like to be surprised. But they talk about Jesse Belvin and how important he was to, rock and roll back in the day. So, my sources this week are from Wikipedia, an article from Jim Williamson, and an article from Eric Lenneberg. And I know I read this and I probably did not write it down, but I think Eric Lenneberg was going to write a book. I don't know if he has. I tried to look it up, but I couldn't find it. But he has actually been researching Jesse Belvin and his story for like umpteen years. I'm gonna say 20, but I swear it said like 30. I could be wrong. Yeah, so I was kind of hoping that he had actually written the book. So I'm gonna try to do more research on that and see if there is a book. But they had given a title on one of the articles and I couldn't find it. So, I didn't write it down. But, so Jesse Belvin was born Jesse Lorenzo Belvin. And, I apologize if I call him Lorenzo because that's what I've been doing for, like, the last week.
That's okay.
And, yeah.
I fucked up, like, five words in mine.
Well, so and then I was like, oh, shoot, his name's not Lorenzo, it's Jesse. But Lorenzo was part of his name. I'm just very happy about that. So, Jesse was born December 15th, 1932, and he passed away February 6th, 1960. And Jesse was an American rock and roll singer. He was a pianist. He was a songwriter. He was popular in the 50s and was killed in a suspicious car crash at the age of 27. And we'll get back to
He's
the car
one
crash.
Of the 27s.
I didn't even realize this, until I was reading about it. So, like Chrissy said, one of the 27s. So there is a thing called the 27 Club, which for some people don't, like, music isn't your thing. So young singers who never make it past 27. So singers that are part of this club include Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Kurt Cobain, and Amy Winehouse.
There's also actors,
yeah,
too, but...
Yeah, so it's not just singers. But unfortunately, yes, he's part of the 27 Club.
That's sad.
Yeah. So Jesse was born in San Antonio, Texas, and he moved with his family to LA at the age of 5 years. So in 1950, he joined Three Dots and a Dash, which I just think is the greatest name ever.
Is that the name of a band?
Yeah, I just think it's the greatest
thing.
That's
amazing.
Three Dots and a Dash. They were saxophonist Big J McNeely's backing vocals quartet. So it was like...
Nice.
Yeah, so they had their own little group plus Jay McNeely. Big J McNeely. They were featured prominently on their record releases. And in 1952, he joined Specialty Records. His early solo records weren't very successful. His fourth record, Dream Girl, reached number 2 on the U.S. Billboard charts in 1953. And then Jesse was drafted into the Army around 1953, but he continued to write songs. He co-wrote Earth Angel, and we all know Earth Angel, and I would sing it, but we'd also have to pay a lot of money. But loved the song. So it was kind of cool to find out that, because like I said, like I love music, and I love hearing about new musicians and oldies that I've never heard about, So it was kind of nice to know, like, something he had done. Like, I had actually heard it.
That's cool.
Yeah. So he co-wrote Earth Angel with Curtis Williams and Gaynell Hodge. And it was recorded by the Penguins. I know.
Sorry, that's a horrible name.
I know. It is. It is.
Okay, sorry.
It's fine. I mean, I'm sure you really love it. And I bet your mom and dad really loved it, too. So, but it became one of the first R&B singles to cross over onto the pop charts, and it sold 1 million copies from 54 to 55. So in 1956, he signed a contract with Modern Records, but he continued to sing for other labels under different names. So I don't know if that was something that was in his contract, like you could sing for other labels. I mean, I'm assuming that that's what it was. Like, you could sing for other labels, but you couldn't use your actual name, maybe? I don't know.
That's weird.
I don't know.
Because I would think that a label would not let you do that.
Well, that's probably how he got away with it, though. I mean, look, guys, I am not in the record business. So, let's see. So, he continued to sing for using different names. So, Jesse's biggest hit was Goodnight, My Love, which reached number 7 on the R&B charts. Fun fact, the piano on the session reportedly was played by 11-year-old Barry White.
Holy shit, that's so awesome.
Yeah, who has that deep voice, and who would later become the singer of Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Baby. And he also became a producer, singer, songwriter, composer, and musician. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
So the song became the closing theme to Alan Freed's rock and roll radio shows. And in 1958, he recorded You Cheated, which reached number 15 on the U.S. pop charts and 11 on the R&B chart. So Jesse was inspired by his wife and manager, Joanne, to develop his style and was signed to RCA Records in 1959, which he immediately had a top 40 hit with Guess Who, written by his wife, Joanne. The song had originally started as a love letter from her to him, and then Belvin turned it into the hit song it became. So I thought that was kind of cool.
That is cool.
Jesse also recorded the album Just Jesse Belvin, which had developed a mature and sophisticated sound on ballads. Jesse's style was influenced by Nat King Cole and Billy Eckstine, and became a model for Sam Cooke and many others. He became known as Mr. Easy, and the record company had started to mold him into a potential crossover star for white audiences, as well as a professional rival to Capitol Records recording star Nat King Cole.
Nice. And,
I mean, living in nowadays, like, watching the documentary, you don't realize how separate everything was.
Yeah.
And, like, it was insane. They were talking about how, the white kids would be up in the rafters, or what do you call that?
The nosebleeds?
Well, we would call them the nosebleed section now. Balcony.
Oh, God.
They would be up in the balcony as well. The African-American kids would be down below. Which, I mean...
Interesting.
Yeah. And then... The white kids would get upset because they were having a lot more fun.
Oh, get over
right?
It.
Oh my gosh. Why aren't you sitting next to each other and learning to, like,
so
love each
stupid.
Other? So anyway, so then it became a thing where they flip-flopped and they made the African American community stay up in the balcony. And then, yeah, I know, it's so stupid. Guys, hate is stupid. So, Jesse later in that year recorded soulful covers of standards such as Blues in the Night and In the Still of the Night.
I love that song.
They were issued on the album Mr. Easy. So, However, before the album was issued and shortly before finishing a performance on a bill with Sam Cooke, Jackie Wilson, and Marv Johnson on February 6, 1960, Jesse and his wife were killed in a head-on collision in Hope, Arkansas. The concert was the first played before an integrated audience in the history of Little Rock. The performance was interrupted twice by white supremacists in the audience shouting racial epithets and urging white teenagers in attendance to leave at once. Like, just let it be. Like, stop. Oh.
So stupid.
I just want to scream at people. So, it has been speculated that the tires on Jesse's car had been tampered with and had caused the head-on collision.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Because, well, like I said, this is the first integrated,
Yeah. No, and people concert. Would have done anything to stop it from happening.
Yeah. So,
I shouldn't say people. Certain people.
Mainly the KKK. Or the white supremacists. Same thing.
Which would be, yeah.
I know. So they thought someone had tampered with them and had caused the head-on collision that had killed Jesse and his driver on impact. Joanne, unfortunately, died a day later in the Hope Hospital. And, so the other occupants of the car, and I know I wrote this down in two places, so excuse me if I... No, I think I found it. So the other occupants of the car were a Mr. and Mrs. Knowles, and it seems like, Mrs. Knowles lived, because she was pulled from the other car, not sure if she survived after the crash,
right.
Like Joanne did, or Joanne didn't, but it sounds like her husband didn't survive, so... I mean, how can people do that shit? It just drives me crazy.
People are assholes.
Just drives me crazy. So Dick Clark had used Belvin's song Goodnight My Love as the closing theme for American Bandstand for several years. Jesse and Joanne had two children, and they were left as orphans until their paternal grandmother assumed legal custody. It has been said that there had been at least 6 death threats on Jesse that night. Well, I don't think it was that night, per se.
No, it was
but within
leading
the,
up to
yeah,
that night.
Yeah, leading up to that night. He had called home twice in a few days to tell his mom about all the hostile receptions he had received. And it was known that he rarely did that. So, he usually didn't call home from the road, and it was never more than once a month if he did.
Well, he probably wanted to make sure his family was okay.
Yeah. So, Etta James, who is another...
I love Etta James.
I know, me too. She called Jesse Belvin, the most gifted of all. Even now, I consider him the greatest singer of my generation. Rhythm and blues, rock and roll, crooner, you name it. He was going to be bigger than Sam Cooke and bigger than Nat King Cole. It was said that Jackie Wilson, who he had... Jackie Wilson was part of the bill. That's what they call, like, the lineup.
Yeah.
For the performances. He was part of the lineup with Sam Cooke and Marv Johnson and Jesse Belvin that night. So, it has been said that Jackie Wilson told the press that he had requested his lawyer look into the matter of the crash, but no official determination was ever made. Belvin was buried in L.A. in 1962. The single, Tonight My Love, backed with Looking for Love, was released posthumously. Ugh! Gosh, those dang
Isn't
words.
Is it humi? I can't say
nope,
it now either.
No.
I was saying it in my head.
Posthumously. You just have to say it really fast, and then it sounds like it. Just kidding. So anyways, and in 1961, the unforgettable Jesse Belvin was released, which is his last album.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Watch The Two Killings of Sam Cooke. It was on Netflix. I learned a lot, obviously, because I didn't even know any... First off, I didn't know that Sam Cooke was, like, best friends with Muhammad Ali. And it's so cute to watch them sitting next to each other and, like, just watching them be friends. And I didn't know that those two were hanging out with Jim Brown and, Malcolm X. Like, it was just crazy to watch all four of them all together. It was kind of, it was cool. So, yeah, please, if you like 40s and 50s music, 60s, 70s, definitely give The Two Killings of Sam Cooke a try.
Well, even if you don't, it'd be interesting to see just, I like watching stuff like that and finding out,
how horrible some people were back in the day.
I already know how horrible some people are. Although they're not as bad now, they're still just...
Yeah.
There's just as bad people now as there was back then. Fucking idiots. Anyways, that shit pisses me off.
Yep.
I guess I just don't understand it.
I don't understand how you can hate someone just because of the way they look. Like, I don't get it.
I don't either. But we were raised different, too.
I know, but it just really, really bothers me. Like, I understand people judging people, like, first look or whatever.
Well, everybody does that anyways.
But, I mean, we're talking, like, hate. Like, in your heart.
Yeah.
For someone you don't even know.
You're not born that way. You're taught that shit.
No, I know, but it just drives me. It's insane. It's insane, people. So.
All right. Let's talk about something happier.
Oh, Lord. So what have you been watching this week?
I've been rewatching all the Harry Potter movies. I love Harry Potter.
Chrissy said that Edward Cullen really pissed her off, so she doesn't like him anymore. And I was like, Edward Cullen, that name sounds really familiar.
No, he got better.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay. And then she was like, no, the guy that plays Edward Cullen. And I was like,
I couldn't remember his name.
What movie is he from? Wow.
The Sparkly Boy.
How you forget about Twilight.
It's like diamonds in the sun.
Wow.
Sorry. That was the cheesiest movie ever.
I don't even watch.
It was so bad.
So we went, I dragged Chrissy and one of our friends, Angela, to go see this movie because I thought it was going to be amazing. I don't know if I had read the books by then.
I think we had, because that's why we wanted to go see it, because we had read the book.
Okay.
And we're like, oh my god, this is going to be so good.
Yeah. We sit down, and first off, I didn't even realize that when she walked into the classroom and the fan blew her scent towards his way, I was like, what the hell is happening? Like, I didn't even register that the wind had blown her scent towards him, and that's why he was like, I need to eat you, like, right now. And I just was like, guys, I'm really, really sorry. I'm really sorry that I dragged you to this.
It was pretty bad. Thank God they got better after that.
Yes, they did get better.
That first one, though, I was like, oh god, they're not going to make any more. It was so bad.
I'm glad they did finish the series, though.
I am, too.
I would have been really upset.
It was so bad.
But it was definitely interesting.
Yeah.
So, anything else you've been rewatching? Watching?
Well, Harry Potter is 3 hours long, and there's 8 movies, so no, that's pretty much it.
What movie are you on now?
I just finished, I think, the 6th one, or I'm halfway through the 6th one. I can't remember.
That's awesome.
I think we're halfway through the 6th one.
That's awesome.
I don't have anything else to do.
So, I've been rewatching Murder, She Wrote because I'm crazy. And I'm also 70 in a 45-year-old's body.
This is true. She watched Criminal Intent. No.
I love Bobby.
No, not Criminal Intent. The old, the people.
The old.
Andrew said you're old because you watch it. What the hell show was that?
I don't know.
It wasn't Criminal Intent. It was,
Oh, NCIS.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, it did.
I was like, it's some of the letters. I don't know.
Yep. So, that's it for this week. Sorry, guys, you had to wait a couple extra days.
Yeah, we're recording. I don't know. We're leaving to go to the beach for spring break, so I'm not sure.
I'm not sure if we're going to have special guests.
Well, we have one that would like to be a special guest.
Yes. Our,
I don't know how that's going to work out.
Our niece, Jersey, would love to be on this.
And she is crazy and is, like, trying to...
herd cats.
Yeah.
But it's cool. We love her.
She's, like, sees shiny things and is, like, on something else.
Yeah. So we might have, like, a little mini episode.
Maybe.
With her and Parker.
Parker says he's not doing
it. Oh, okay. So, Jers. And then we're going, we're staying in a beach house with, Uncle Steve again and Dad, so maybe they'll make a reappearance.
Well, I think we should do the ghost stories.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Because isn't that what Jersey wants to do, too, is ghost stories?
I think so.
But if we have her on with Dad, she won't be able to talk because he'll just never shut up.
Well... we had to interrupt him last time.
It's true.
That's okay.
Or
though.
Uncle Steve wouldn't have talked at all.
I know, poor guy.
Just kept going.
Just steamrolled him.
Right.
All right. We will see. See you. We'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Keep it real.
Yep. Have a good night.
Bye.